Popcorn Junkies. Welcome to this movie review of a film called Monster. What not to like about the title, Monster? You may or may not have seen the trailer for this. This is a Japanese film. It's directed by a director. Apologies if I pronounce his name incorrectly. Hirokazu Koreeda. He directed Shoplifters. Did very well. Was a big success on the art house circuit. Broker, After the Storm, and Still Walking. Now, I saw this trailer a couple of times seeing other things, and I'm going to sort of bobble it along underneath me now. And I sort of went into this film. It's a psychological thriller, a psychological drama, if you like. And I thought this was going to be a film that kind of riffed on the idea of what's the making of a monster. You know, that it was about a child who perhaps was behaving badly, had done things that were wrong, had maybe killed someone or done something awful. Or as it so happens at the beginning of this film, it starts with a huge set piece of a block of flats on fire. Was he an arsonist? Does he do evil psychopathic things? And is this going to be a portrait of what goes into the making of a monster? And perhaps the making of a monster is just quite ordinary in the end. So that's what I thought it was going to be about. And in a weird way, it kind of is about that, but in a very indirect and sort of fractured fashion. So this is a film really that's kind of interested in the sort of monstrous, if you like, outcomes or monstrous happenings or events that can be the consequence or the result of not just people's actions, individual people's actions in the event, but also people's interpretations or opinions or perspectives on it. And that perspectives, many multi-perspectives, is what this film is about. This is a film that's told, a story is told, or a series of events are told about a young boy, but also about a single mother, and also about the teacher. So they're all connected because the single mother's the mother of the child, and the child is being taught by the teacher. And we get a sort of portrait of a set period of time, pinned sort of temporally in terms of time and geographically to this moment of this fire. So you have this fire at the sort of background of every one of the three different points of view. So this story is told from three different points of view. So our first point of view is the mother of the child, a single mother, and she begins to notice sort of strange behavior by her child. She's kind of the kind of alarm bells ringing when he's sort of in the bathroom and he's sort of cutting chunks out of his hair, and he keeps asking questions about whether he had a pig's brain transplant at some point. And it slowly kind of is revealed that he starts to say to his mum that he's being bullied by his teacher, a character called Hori. And he's being sort of taunted and bullied and teased. And this teacher told him that he may have had a pig's brain transplanted into his head. It's quite a sort of gory thing. At one point, I must admit, I was sort of thinking, maybe he has had a pig's brain. Is this going to be one of those fantastical films where actually he's got the brain of a pig? So it's from her perspective. Not surprisingly, she goes up to school. She goes up the school, like any good parent in London, I'm going up the school, to have a go and have a chat and clarify what the hell's going on with the teaching staff. And we get this incredibly curious, tight-lipped kind of response from the school, where quite literally in the headmistress's office, none of them say anything. They keep bowing a lot, and then the teacher is brought in. He doesn't say what's happened, but he sort of apologises, and you sort of think, this is weird. Are we in some kind of strange, muted kind of environment? And so there were many moments in this film where I thought, is this about reality, or is this kind of magic realism? Is this odd? Is this fantastical? And so you have this odd situation where she's trying to get to the bottom of what's going on. She won't be told anything. She feels she's going mad, but she's aware that her child is out of sorts. He's got weird shit going on. But we also see that she finds in his backpack a firelighter. You know, one of those firelighters where you sort of pull the trigger and the flame comes out. What does that mean? Did he set the house on fire, the block of flats on fire? Or did he simply burn the body of a cat that we see in a later point of view? So that's the single mum. She believes the teacher's at fault. The school says nothing. Her boy is weird. And at the end, she kind of finds him kind of, you know, running around in a tunnel, in a sort of very reminiscent of the Alex Garland film Men, a sort of a dark tunnel with lots of water running through it and a derelict train at the end. Point of view number two is the teacher, Hori. And for me, this was kind of, this section for me was kind of the most successful or the most interesting and the most stressful in a way. I was kind of reminded of that film, The Hunt, that stars Mads Mikkelsen. If you haven't seen it, do check it out, in which he plays a teacher who is accused of paedophilia. But is there any substance to the accusation? We feel he's innocent. There's the definite suggestion he's innocent. And it's that whole thing of being trapped, being hunted being kind of associated with something unspeakably bad. And in many respects, that's what happens to Horry, the character in this film. He's kind of marked out by some of the students. They say that he's been to a sort of what they call a hostess's kind of place, or a brothel. He's dating potentially a sex worker. And so he's kind of marked. And so that kind of explains to you that whilst the single mum believes her son is being bullied by a teacher, Horry, the teacher, is actually kind of being bullied by not only the kids in the class and at the school, but we feel that he's also being bullied in essence by the school, because what the school says is, his argument is, I haven't bullied him, I haven't hurt him, I accidentally knocked his nose whilst trying to stop him bullying other kids in class, or so he thought. And the school says, parents are always right, the customer's always right, you've got to stay quiet. And essentially we watch the teacher slowly lose his job, and he's made redundant. And there are a couple of other kind of run-ins where he tries to kind of protest his innocence, not only to the boy's mum, but to the boy at school. But then the boy falls down the stairs and things just get worse and worse and worse. And so in a sense, as I say, he's kind of bullied into resignation from the school. And then we have point of view number three, which is from the perspective of the boy, the son of the single mum, and the boy that has accused Horry, the teacher, of bullying him. And what we discover with this boy is that all the complications around his behaviour. So, for example, the teacher believes he was bullying all the other kids in the class. And what actually transpires from the boy's perspective is he was actually defending another boy in class that he kind of has almost a kind of childlike romantic interest in. He's this other boy in class is the boy that touched his hair, and which is why he was cutting off. So there's embarrassment and awkwardness and a difficulty with potentially the sexuality awakenings in him. The other boy that touched his hair, his dad is an alcoholic and is anti any suggestion that he could be in any way gay or anything. There's no real sexual suggestion between the two young boys. They're too young. So again, this third perspective from this boy gives us a sense that, you know, all isn't as it seems from both the teacher's perspective or from the mum's perspective. All the while, with the beginning of each POV, we see this fire going off in the background. And it's clever. It's kind of neat because it leaves you thinking, who did it? Why did they do it? And because you've got this title, I mean, I don't know about you, but for me, having the title Monster, it kept coming back to me and I kept thinking, monster, monster. You're being told to think something. I mean, it's like they're saying, don't judge a book by its cover. I disagree. I was saying to one of the girls the other day, do judge a book by its cover, because a lot of creative minds and heads and the author will have had input in what that cover is saying to the potential reader. And so you can't ignore a title. So who is the monster? Is the monster the mum? I don't think so. Or is it because she's her child doesn't feel he can talk to her? Is the monster the teacher because he's a bully? I don't think so, because he's kind of losing his job. Is the monster the boy? Not necessarily, because actually he's got unrequited love or confused adolescent love or emotions for this other child. What each perspective POV does, though, I mean, what you often get, if you get a film where you've got lots of shifting perspectives, it's a neat device. But, you know, what you generally have in films is the idea that each of these perspectives give you a different angle, but not necessarily a completely competing angle that kind of rubbishes the one before. And so whilst there are lots of junction points and there's always that fun bit of any film where you're like, oh, right, this is that moment where that happens from his POV. Oh, okay, cool. So, and you hang on to those moments because you sort of think, oh, these must be true moments. But each POV, as it runs out, has a completely different conclusion or a different end. So the film, in a sense, has two or even three different endings. One, you can read potentially horrendously in terms of death, disaster, and the end of things. The other, you could read romantically and positively in the sense of new beginnings running off into a distant future. And so in a weird way, whilst you've got these shifting perspectives, it's a frustrating film. I wanted to like it more than I did, let me put it that way. But in a weird way, the fact that there was no certainty at all, really, between the three stories meant that it was very hard to get on board with what the it was kind of wanting its cake and eating it in terms of using this device, because you every time you went to sort of cross reference, if you like, one POV with another, it didn't quite marry up. And I think that's probably the point, but I don't necessarily know if it makes for successful storytelling or necessarily a successful film. I think what it's trying to show us is that every perspective on any situation in life is right and appropriate to the person in question, even if your reading of that situation isn't particularly accurate or isn't right or is limited from your literal point of view. You know, perhaps it speaks to that line that we hear so often. I don't know if you get this in with anyone you know, where someone says, it's my truth. It's just like, fuck you, it's my truth. And I could turn around, but the problem with anyone who says it's my truth is that whoever they're saying it to, they can turn around and go, yeah, but this is my truth. And weirdly, everyone's truth is different, but everyone's truth is true to them. But what is truth? So when someone once said to me, oh no, this is my truth, I remember turning around and going, yeah, but it's not the truth. But what is the truth? The truth is subjective. So all these three perspectives telling this similar story about the fate, if you like, of this boy and his other adolescent friend, and the fate of the teacher, and the fate of the mum, and the fate of the headmistress. I want to just sort of give a word about say something about the headmistress towards the end of this review. There is no shift. There is no truth. It's all shifting. It's all moving. And in many respects, I think the monster in this potentially pivots around the actual head teacher character. She's the one who's got this kind of culture in the school of say nothing. The school is more important. Sacrifice your career to the teacher and not really doing anything for the child. And we discover that in a curious personal incident, I think I got this correctly, her grandchild died, or she ran him over by accident, and she made her partner or someone else essentially take the blame or foot the bill, if you like. And they're in prison. And you sort of think, oh, and you can't help but wonder whether what this film is sort of suggesting is that the monstrous qualities or the monster in the room could emanate from someone who's unrelated to all these people in a direct way. But her monstrosity, which has itself come from her own trauma, can ripple out. So in a sense, the head teacher is perhaps the monster, if you like, from which all the resulting misinterpretations and really awful consequences occur. All of this makes it sound like a much more compelling film than it is. Well, maybe it doesn't. Maybe just it makes it sound like a completely kind of complicated film and impenetrable. It's not impenetrable, but it's not easy to watch. You'd think it would be neat and simple with these three sort of sections, but it isn't. You find yourself unsatisfied with being able to kind of cling to a sort of safety raft of certainty. I mean, don't get me wrong, there are moments like, there was one moment where one kid running to school drops a bag, and you see it from the point of view of the child, and you see it from the point of view of the teacher in the next take. So you get lots of those moments, the fire in the block of flats, you get these moments. But in a weird way, I found the monstrous, the consequences or the events that were happening to these characters' lives, whilst not good, weren't serious enough. And so again, I think what this film suffers from is a title that in a weird way, even if you're not going into it, because you know it's an art house Japanese film, you're not going in thinking it's going to be monsters, but it does speak to, monster is a strong loaded word. And I think that perhaps this film slightly loses something because it doesn't live up to the strength or the weight of what the word monster means. I think it could have been cleverer in its execution. I think it could have been tighter. I wasn't particularly emotionally engaged with any of the characters, really. I was sort of held at one arm's length. I don't know if that was a cultural thing, perhaps. But I have to say, as I said, I think the story of the teacher trying to prove that he's not this bad guy and losing his job and appealing and, you know, there's a moment, does he or won't, doesn't he? And I mean, I suppose, kill himself. There's a moment where he's standing on the edge of a precipice of a building and you think, oh my God, he's going to throw himself off. And the camera does this clever thing where it sort of just pans away and you don't see the sort of end of that moment. So in many regards, maybe this film is constantly suggesting, well, none of this is reliable. None of this is believable. Everyone is an unreliable narrator, which in and of itself is kind of interesting and potentially fun. But in the end, it's 2 hours, 7 minutes, you get a little bit kind of, well, if everyone is so unreliable, take us somewhere specific. And I don't think the film takes us anywhere specific. I don't think it really knew what its destination was. And even at the end, I found it kind of dropped the ball. But that said, there's a lot that's of interest within it if you have a spare couple of hours.